Welcome to Tentpole Trauma, the podcast where we look at movies that came with hype and high hopes, but left with crushing disappointment, either critically, at the box office, or both. Freed from the weight of expectations, we seek to examine these underperformers under a new light, parsing through the good, the bad, and everything in between with the hopes of gaining a better understanding as to why they failed to find their audience. Warning, there will be spoilers, so if you haven't seen the movie that we're discussing today, I suggest you stop the podcast and go watch it. Then when you come back and listen, you'll get more out of the discussion. On this episode, we discuss Speed 2, Cruise Control. Sebastian, and I'm here with Jennifer.
Hello.
It's just the two of us again.
Just the two of us.
I've come to enjoy these Just the Two of Us podcasts, my dear.
Really?
Well, I like talking with you about movies, obviously.
I think it's mostly about the editing.
It is a lot about the editing. Because these are much easier to edit.
I knew that's what it really boiled down to. But before we get into Speed 2 Cruise Control, the one thing that's missing from these Just the Two of Us is normally we have a third person on and you will ask that person, because you know what I'm up to and that's nothing of interest really, but you usually will ask that third host that's on, you know, what's going on, if they have anything they want to promote or, you know, just what's happening. And when it's just you and I, no one's asking what's happening, and I think you need to share what's happening with you, Sebastian O'Brien, also known as Sebastian Bendix.
This is true. I am also known as Sebastian Bendix, which was my birth name. O'Brien is my adopted name. And I am an author and a writer. That sounds like the same thing, but it kind of isn't. And we are currently shopping my heavy metal horror novel, Hellbent for Heather, that's out to publishers and agents currently. Mm-hmm. But in the meantime, I thought that I might put out some stuff for people to read that's easier to access at the present. So I'm publishing a series of novellas based around my supernatural gunslinger character, Hollow Jack. Mm-hmm. So if you're interested in reading stories by a guy who hosts a podcast about blockbuster bombs, check out Hollow Jack and the Blood Curse of Blackwater. It's a supernatural Western in the weird Western genre. That's what I'm up to, you know, among other things. But that's something that if you're a listener and you are at all interested in my writing, you can check that out on Amazon. We're self-publishing these just because we want to get them out there to give people something new to read.
He also has, just because I'm his wife and the person who is the hype man over here, if you do go to Amazon or Smashwords, yeah, those would be the two places that most everything lives. But yeah, he's got a couple other novels that are up there as well. He's got a bunch of other novellas that have been published in different publications. Then we did put them all together. I think it was 12 total, if I remember correctly, for the diorama and other stories, something like that, 10 or 12. But we put them all so they live in one spot. And we put that out, I think it was like probably about 4 years ago, I think now. So yeah, there's a lot of Sebastian's writing out there, and I happen to enjoy it, and I think you might too, and he doesn't ever talk about it, so I'm forcing him to talk about it.
There's a reason why, and that's because whenever I hear podcasters talk about their artistic endeavors, I roll my eyes. But, you know, sometimes people are out there doing some good stuff, so...
Well, just know that there's probably some eye rolling going on, but...
Yeah.
Nevertheless...
Well, if you're rolling your eyes... at my self-promotion, just know that I'm the jerk that's rolling my eyes at other people's self-promotion. So it all evens out in the end.
It all comes out in the wash. That's right, Sebby.
Yes, but most of my stuff is in the horror genre, mm-hmm. but I do love sci-fi and I do love action and other stuff. So anyway, if you're interested, check it out. Probably the best way to find everything is to go to sebastianbendix.com. That's Bendix with an X.com. And you'll find links to all of my brilliant writings there. But we're not here to talk about my writing.
No, we were just for a minute, but we're moving on. We're talking about something else much more exciting.
Much more thrilling. We are talking about Speed 2 Cruise Control from 1997. Now, this is a movie that I didn't get around to seeing until, I think, a year or so ago. I... wasn't even really that big a fan of the original Speed up until recently. It was just one of those movies that came out in the 90s, and I just never got around to watching it for whatever reason. I was kind of Keanu Reeves averse for a while. I've really come around to Keanu and have embraced him in all his many forms, and I do enjoy the original Speed, but Speed 2 just seemed like something I had no interest in watching because A, Keanu's not even in it, and B, I remember when it came out, it was widely mocked because it was about a boat that's going fast, and a boat going fast just isn't quite the same as a bus or any other sort of vehicle. So it seemed ironic that the Speed franchise was veering into an area where things were moving much slower than before.
They are, but after just rewatching this again, and it's been a minute, I think I watched this with you whenever you watched it last, and I did, I saw the original Speed in the theater, did not see Speed 2 in the theater. I'm surprised. I mean, I guess only with you not being that into Keanu or this genre at the time is the only reason I could see that you would not see it, because you're such a completist of series and franchises that I'm surprised. But I guess just because you weren't that into it and originally, that's the only reason, because otherwise you would have seen it. This is just how you are. You can't not see all the films in a franchise.
No, that's definitely true. And I think it's just when I finally got around to watching Speed, then I was like, oh, well, I need to watch Speed 2 Cruise Control then. But yeah, for whatever reason, you know, I was doing other things in the 90s, as we've discussed before. Although I did see a lot of movies because I worked at a movie theater.
Right, but your movie theater wasn't showing Speed.
No, and I wouldn't really go seeking out these types of blockbusters. Some of them I would, some I wouldn't. It just depended, you know, like... But for whatever reason, I didn't watch Speed, even though everyone who saw it was like, oh, it's actually good. You know, I heard it was good, and obviously it was a hit. They made a sequel and, you know, made a star out of Sandra Bullock specifically. I mean, Keanu had already been a star,
right,
but she had not. And I really feel like this movie was the one that really made her a star, to the point where in Speed 2, she's really the star.
Right.
Even though they tried desperately, so sweatily and desperately to sell you on Jason Patrick as the star of the new Speed. And I don't think they do a very good job. But let me get your thoughts on Speed.
Oh, I love Speed. And I like Speed from the first time I saw it. Like, it's a super fun, good time. Now, even though I've seen Speed way more than I've seen Speed 2, I'm going to confess that as I did to you tonight, where I was like, I can't remember the ending of Speed, because in my mind, it ends with the escape from the bus and the explosion at LAX. And I always forget that there's this whole other piece where they end up downtown and in the subway and all that stuff. So I requested that I watch the end to try it. And when I was watching, I was like, oh yeah, I remember this, but it's just such a weird piece. And they kind of do this in two as well, because we have the big crisis that happens and that's somewhat resolved. I mean, it could have gone worse. But then we have this other piece because, again, Annie, who is Sandra Bullock, good name, has been taken as well. And so we have this other thing we have to deal with.
Yes.
So I will probably forget how Speed 2 ends again as well.
I definitely have forgotten how it ended before watching it tonight. Definitely structurally, they're very similar. And I don't think you could be blamed for forgetting how the original Speed ends, because it just feels like this little mini sequel. Yeah. That's on the end of the movie. Annie gets captured by crazy Dennis Hopper and they've got to go into the subway and have this fight on a subway train and on top of the subway train.
Right.
It's only about 20 minutes long, but it's like a little mini movie. You know, it's fun for what it is, but it doesn't have the kind of hook of the bus situation that the bulk of the movie has, you know, and it's a commuter bus. So there's like all these random characters on board. And, you know, it's essentially the Die Hard formula, which is, you know, a terrorist is attacking civilians in some sort of like place or isolated location or contained location, rather. And an intrepid hero takes them on. Speed, I think, by adding the Annie character, sort of added something to it. Like, she was much more of an active character rather than just, say, like a love interest. You know, she's the one who's actually got to drive the bus, you know. And while Keanu's doing all the sort of cop action guy heroics, she's, you know, providing, I think, a lot of comic relief. And also,
she's driving the bus. She's doing things.
Yeah, she's doing things.
She's like, you know, being talked through what she needs to do.
This movie tries to maintain that. And obviously, Sandra Bullock is kind of the star here. However, I do think one of its big flaws is that it feels the need to try to make Jason Patrick the new Keanu Reeves and give him most of the sort of like action guy things to do. And she like helps out and does heroic things, but she's still kind of not really front and center, where I feel like they should have just made her front and center.
Yeah.
I know it's kind of not really in her character. I mean, in the original Speed, her character is kind of flighty. I mean, you know, when we first meet her, she's running to catch the bus and she's late. She's kind of doesn't have her shit together.
Right.
That's the Annie character.
Right.
And in this movie, we begin cross-cutting between these two sequences. Annie, she has to take a driving test for, I think she got her license taken away.
That's where she's taking the bus in Speed.
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah, it's good continuity.
Good continuity, yes. And Tim Conway is her instructor. And of course, she's a terrible driver. And there's lots of gags about, you know, almost getting into wrecks and whatever. And meanwhile, her new boyfriend, Alex, as played by Jason Patrick, is chasing down this criminal in a UPS truck or something, or
an ice cream truck, but it's like full of computers or something that they've lifted, and he's doing like all this, like he's on a motorcycle, and we know he can ride a motorcycle because of Michael in The Lost Boys.
That's right. He's on a Ducati, so it's a fancy motorcycle.
He knows what he's doing. Yeah, he's doing all this wild stuff. Like you said, going back and forth between Annie and her driving test, and they're getting very close to where each other is located.
Right.
And Annie's telling Tim Conway in the car about how, you know, she didn't work out with Jack, her last boyfriend, because she was always so worried about everything he was doing.
And that's Keanu.
Exactly. But now she's got this new boyfriend, Alex, who, like, he's a beach cop. He works over in Venice. They met because she was jaywalking, and Tim Conway's like, jaywalking is against the law. And
when I first moved to LA, everybody told me, don't jaywalk. You'll get a ticket. Yeah. For it. Which you will.
You will.
But they really put the fear of God in me not to jaywalk in LA. And I never did get a jaywalking ticket.
I never did either, but I got the exact same thing. But I think it was also for me because I lived over by the beach for a long time. And that seems like more of a jaywalking area. I mean, that's where Sandra Bullock's character was jaywalking. It's just, you know, I don't know. It's not as busy. Those streets aren't.
Yeah.
So you just kind of feel like you can run across or whatever. But yeah, it was really like the fear of the jaywalking ticket was pressed into me as well.
The fear was real.
Yeah. Now she's dating Alex and he's a beach cop and she doesn't, you know, he doesn't have to worry about him as much and all this stuff. And then we're cross-cutting to him like doing some wild things. And he's obviously not a beach cop.
No, I think they say he's SWAT.
He's SWAT. Yeah, he is SWAT.
A couple of things. One, I'll give this movie a compliment, and that is that they kind of had a nice little built-in out for themselves if they needed to recast the male lead, because the running gag at the end of Speed is that Annie says to Jack, as played by Keanu Reeves, mm-hmm. like relationships formed under stressful situations never work out.
That's right.
Right? So it's like this joke, which is funny if you watch like action movies, because it's true. Like, you know, usually the two leads fall in love mm-hmm. and it's like, what is it about being in a high tension situation that makes people fall in love with each other in movies? So they set up that little seed in Speed without knowing it. And so the fact that it didn't work out between her and Jack tracks in terms of the logic.
That's right.
But what I will criticize this movie as is like the way they're setting up the Alex character, the Jason Patrick character, like, you know, he's after this truck and he's like doing like jumps out of nowhere. And it's just so over the top. Like they're just trying to sell him as such a action hero right out of the gate. So hardcore. And it's no shade on Jason Patrick. He's a perfectly decent actor, but for whatever reason, he just doesn't cut it as like action man for me.
It's fine in this or whatever, but I think there's a reason that you don't see him in any other action movies.
Yeah, this movie.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the only other thing that he was in that was kind of action-y was...
You're talking about Rush.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of as Rush. And that's like the only other kind of police, you know, he's undercover, but it gets action-y.
Yeah, it's a crime thriller.
Right.
But this is more of like an action movie.
Totally, totally.
And, you know, I can see the logic of casting him. There's no reason why you think that he couldn't work as an action hero. I mean, he's good looking. Obviously, he's a really good actor. But, I mean, I think of him more as being kind of a serious actor. And I feel like guys that end up being decent action heroes are kind of not super serious
right.
actors.
They're,
you know,
wanting to have more fun. Well, I can tell you a couple things about the film. He only agreed to make this contingent on some major script changes. This is in the trivia. And when he eventually arrived on set 3 months later, he found that the script hadn't changed at all. But then he was contractually obligated to make the film. So he was completely like miserable and depressed throughout the whole shoot. And then he also used his entire salary to finance Your Friends and Neighbors, which was a film that he did in 98. The reason that Keanu didn't do this is because he was doing Devil's Advocate and was touring with Dogstar, his band.
I remember those days.
And apparently Fox was pissed.
I listened to a commentary track on Speed from the writer Graham Yost and the producer, I'm forgetting his name. Neither of them were involved with Speed 2. Both Speed and Speed 2 are directed by Jan de Bont, who was a cinematographer. He shot Die Hard. Speed was his directorial debut, and it was a big hit. And so he was sort of primed to be the big action director of the 90s. This movie kind of started like his career going downhill. I think he also directed The Haunting.
Ooh.
The remake of it.
Oh, yeah.
So things didn't really go that great for Jan de Bont from here on out.
Like, I can't wait till we talk about The Haunting, because that's going to have to happen.
It will, and it is a tentpole trauma.
Yeah, it is.
It's so expensive and was such a failure.
Yeah, but I really just, I love that one.
Well, you're a fan of Jan de Bont. I believe he's Dutch or Danish. Anyway, I think Jan felt like he didn't need to have the writer of the original one or the producer, so he went off on his own to make this movie, and those guys seemed a little bitter about it, and they don't like this movie. So I think there was a lot of acrimony going into this movie coming off of Speed. It didn't have Keanu. It didn't have the producer and the original writer. So I think there were bad feelings abounding all over about this movie.
Well, there definitely was, and especially after the fact, of course, but and also in the trivia, Sandra Bullock jokingly in 2000 in an interview referred to this movie as, quote, the biggest piece of crap ever made, and admitted that she only did the film for money. She got paid like $11.5 million.
Yeah, I'm sure she got a good payday for this. So, well, good for her.
And she did it because she wanted to have her project, Hope Floats.
$11 million, whatever. You know, you're on a cruise ship for a lot of the time. How bad could it have been?
Well, I think it was probably pretty bad. There was, I mean, it looked pretty damp.
It did look pretty damp.
There was plenty of scenes where I was like, this doesn't look like this was fun. There was like seriously a lot of water submerging going on.
Well, let's talk about it. Yes. We won't get too bogged down in sort of everything that happens on the boat. But, you know, the premise of this is that Jason Patrick, you know, wants to make it up to the Sandra Bullock character for lying to her mm-hmm. about his job. He also wants to propose to her, but she doesn't know this. And so, you know, this is going to be the running thread throughout the movie, is he's trying to find the right moment to pop the question. And it just, you know, never happens because they're in the middle of a terrorist situation, essentially. That's
right. We had mentioned that the two car things are happening kind of close to each other. The reason that she finds out he's not a beach cop is because she like literally crashes into their scene of, you know, taking down this heist, and she's like, you're supposed to be at the beach. And so that's how that all comes out.
Watching the original Speed and this movie close together, this one's more comedic. Like, the tone is more jokey mm-hmm. and funny.
Yes.
Speed has humor in it, but this one feels almost goofy. Like, her character right at the beginning is just kind of like, oh, I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
You know.
With all the driving stuff. I mean, you start right out the gate with her doing her driving test.
Right. Like, she's a comically bad driver. Mm-hmm. You know, oh, those women drivers.
You know.
I mean, you've got Tim Conway, right, who's in the car with her, so.
But yes. So Alex is, you know, this was the, they were supposed to, and she's talking to Tim Conway about this as well, that it's their 7-month anniversary, and neither one of them has had this long of a relationship, so they were going to celebrate tonight. And so, yeah, he whips out these tickets, you know, when she finds out he is not a beach cop. And he's like, I do fill in at the beach sometimes, but anyway, he whips out these tickets to go to the Caribbean. And she's like, we work 6 days a week, blah, blah, blah. And then next thing you know, ding, da, ding, da, ding.
The steel drums come out and we are on a cruise ship. Yeah, the music for this movie is kind of eye rolling. It's all this sort of like friggin' Little Mermaid-y kind of like calypso infused music, but then they try to kind of do the action music of that time. It sounds kind of like Bad Boys or whatever the Bad Boys music is, but with like steel drums thrown in there. I hate this type of music.
Well, I was getting some Jaws for the Revenge vibes.
Yeah, it's got a little bit of that going on. There's some irony there for sure.
Yeah.
But we should talk about who the villain is going to be in this.
Oh, yes.
So we're on our cruise ship. We'll talk about the cast of characters that are on there. But our villain for this movie, keeping in the tradition of good character actors, we had Dennis Hopper in the first movie. Here we get Willem Dafoe.
Mm-hmm.
And it's some prime Dafoe. He's got kind of scraggly hair. He's leering and grinning and kind of in Green Goblin
mode. I was like, he is so ready for the Green Goblin here.
Yes.
I feel you could just feel it coming. Like, he is the Green Goblin out of his like outfit.
Yeah, he's almost more Green Goblin-y than the Green Goblin is when he's in the outfit.
I was totally feeling that too while we're watching this.
His character name is like Geiger or something. He's this guy who is a software engineer for cruise ships. And he got sick with some unspecified illness.
He got from using the computer too much, he got copper poisoning.
Right.
And the copper's in his blood. So this was something that you and I both forgot about, which I'm like, how did we forget this? Like, one of the first things we see him do is he's got a whole bunch of pills, but he's also got these little jars of leeches.
Yeah.
And he's like putting leeches on himself, and later they'll all be in his bathtub.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, we don't know why, other than he's not well of some, you know, for some reason. But yes, we find out later it's the copper poisoning from too much computer work.
I wonder if this was something that was a real fear before the age of the internet had fully taken over. I mean, this is 97, so the internet was happening and everything, but now virtually everyone spends all day with a computer and we're not all dying of copper poisoning. So, well, maybe they've changed what's in computers. Who knows?
Who knows? But that was what has happened to Geiger. And he had devoted his life to this cruise ship software. And as soon as he got sick, those bastards just kicked him to the curb.
So now he wants revenge. Now, interestingly, both the speed villains operate completely on their own. Like, they're such masterminds that they need no henchmen. I mean, with Die Hard, you know, you've got henchmen. The main villain, Alan Rickman, and then he's got a bunch of goons. And all of the Die Hard movies are like that. But the speed movies, like, nope, just one guy acting alone. He's capable of taking over these vehicles. This one's particularly ridiculous because, I mean, he is the guy that designed all the software that the cruise ship is running on, right? You know, most of the automatic pilot stuff or whatever it is. And so, you know, he's like hacking into it in his cabin. And, you know, there's this kind of funny scene where he pretends to be drunk and he stumbles into the bridge and like hides a transmitter under the bridge, I guess, so he can access it. And he's controlling everything at a certain point just by his computer. And he's got like these little gas bombs in his golf clubs.
Yeah, and his irons, like his nine iron or whatever. When we first meet him, he's throwing a fit because his golf clubs haven't been delivered to his room. When we see them later, he's like able to like kind of twist the top of the club or whatever. I should know this. Yeah, and he's got like bombs in there, or like timers for bombs or something.
I think they end up being gas bombs because what he does is he makes them think there are fires going on around the ship, but they're not real. Jason Patrick figures out they're not real fires, but that's like what starts like the panic and everything.
Jason Patrick also called it from the beginning because Geiger and Annie were chatting it up at the bar. She was getting their fruity drinks and he's teasing her and he goes, oh, and your new boyfriend over there. And she's like, oh, Geiger. And he says, yeah, for someone who's such a golf fanatic, he's not even watching the game is on. It was like some golf match that was on and he has his back to it. Jason Patrick knew.
Jason Patrick, he's just figuring all of this out. And like, let's talk a little bit about this character of Alex, because I definitely struggle with him. Since you pointed out how unhappy Jason Patrick was to even be there, I think that that kind of tracks, because in the performance, it's like, I just don't get anything from him. It's like, oh, he's just so preoccupied with like criminals and stuff that he can't like relax, and he's always looking for things going wrong, and he seems distracted constantly. Like, that's his character, is that he's distracted and he can't just have a good time. And I don't really think that's a really compelling character.
Well, I think he's also distracted because, as you brought up earlier, he's like trying to figure out when to propose. So there's that thing going on too. Like that keeps happening.
Yeah.
I like Jason Patrick. I think he's fully capable. I don't like disbelieve anything that he does throughout this film. But yeah, it's no Keanu performance.
Well, and it's so funny because Keanu's performance isn't anything special either, but Keanu just has this likability about him.
And believability. Like, you really think that he gives a shit.
Yeah.
It just kind of feels like he's gone into autopilot. Like, you know, like somebody who just is going through the motions of like, this is what I do, this is my job type thing.
Right. They try to sort of humanize the Alex character by putting this deaf girl into the passengers, and you know, he can sign language, obviously. They, you know, they have this scene where they're all having dinner the first night or wherever, like in the dining hall or whatever, and they're seated with all these people, and we sort of meet our cast of kooky passengers. Colleen Camp is one of them. There's this sort of chunky guy who I recognize
from all kinds of things,
but I don't know his name. Lois Childs, who was a Bond girl, she's in Moonraker. She's the mom of the deaf child. And so this is just, I think, a plot device so that we can feel like Jason Patrick has this like nurturing side where he's going to care about this deaf girl. And like the deaf girl's going to get stuck in an elevator at one point and he saves her. And they're flooding compartments at one point and he saves her. She just kind of keeps popping up and he keeps saving her. And she's got like a crush on him. And there's one creepy moment where she signs to him like, "I'll be 15 soon." Like yeah. She's kind of making a pass at him. And he brushes her off, of course, politely. But it is kind of like,
Well, I mean, also it was at a point where they seemed like they might die.
Yes.
So that's why she's saying such a thing,
yeah.
You know, but yeah, it's a little odd. I think the guy is Mike Haggerty, by the way. He's a character actor that you were talking about, one of the others, but it's some other people to mention are Kimmy Robertson.
Right.
From Twin Peaks. Yep. Patrika Darbo. She's a character actor too. She's the other redhead that's kind of heavier. She, mm-hmm. I think she's been on a lot of TV stuff for sure. I recognized her. You recognize most of the cast. The hearing impaired girl that you were talking about, this was her debut.
And then on the like administrative side of the ship, we've got Tamora Morrison, who is like the first mate, who ends up being, you know, kind of Alex's main helper throughout the chaos. You know, early on, once things start going wrong, once Willem Dafoe starts, you know, triggering things in the ship, Alex goes to the bridge because he's figuring out that it's not really a fire. And, you know, Tamora Morrison is like, "Get out of here," or whatever, because Willem Dafoe has killed the real captain of the ship, who's another character actor.
It's Bo Svensson.
Bo Svensson, right, yeah.
Yeah, I recognized him as well. He's been in a lot of stuff.
He's a former football player, I believe. Anyway, so yeah, Willem Dafoe like throws him off the side of the ship. Yep. And whenever anybody falls off the side of the ship, they're immediately like sucked under and they die because of the propellers.
I guess that's why people who fall off cruise ships don't have a chance. It's not just because they are lost at sea. Are they really all getting, I was wondering this, is that really what's happening? They're getting sucked into the propellers?
Maybe.
Who knows?
But so yeah, Tamora Morrison ends up playing a big role in the story just because he's kind of like the main one helping. There's this like Scottish guy who's another officer who has a big part in it and does a lot of the screaming things and whatever. I mean, look, I don't care about talking about every single thing that happens in this movie because it kind of gets repetitive. It's just like one crisis after another. We can go through the notable crises.
Well, no, I mean, I would like to just say like, there are so many, like, this is why this movie is, and I know here I go with my, like, movies are too long. This movie is too long. Speed, too long. Because, like, there's so much that happens on this boat, like so many different, like there's at the beginning, yes, like you said, they think there's fires everywhere, so we're trying to evacuate everybody, and then there's like a problem with one of the boats, and like that's a whole thing, and we have to like rescue people from there, and
right, there's a big set piece where they're trying to get people into the lifeboats because Willem Dafoe has actually said like get everybody off the boat. You know, to his credit as a villain, he doesn't want to kill everyone. He just wants to crash the boat into an ocean tanker and blow it up. Like, he doesn't want to murder all the passengers. But that all goes haywire because, like, everybody's panicking.
Well, not everybody evacuates. Like, some people do. Like, there's some people in a lifeboat that already... And that was a whole thing with the girl who's hearing impaired. Her parents were like... Where is she? She's not going to hear the alarms and this and that and the other. And everybody's like, she just got in another boat. It's fine. And I'm like, no, that's not fine. I was having some serious Titanic vibes happening here. It's real chaotic.
Titanic would come out later this same year and really steal the boat thunder from Speed 2.
Yes. There's so many crises after crises with this ship. And also, yes, William Dafoe's Geiger. Yeah, sure. I guess that's, I thought the same thing. I was like, well, I guess that's nice that he doesn't want to kill everybody. He just wants to crash the boat. But he also later, and you even forgot this, this is such like a forgettable thing, but I was like, yeah, he goes in to like the mall on the ship and like, cause they were, that made a big show at dinner. Remember with the girls going around with all the jewelry on and the diamonds so you could buy that. He goes in and like loots the jewelry store and he's like, ha, 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 ha. I'm a total goblin and he out like throwing on, that's what was in that bag.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So like, I'm like, okay, so I guess this is just a bonus to what he's doing. Cause he wants to crash. The goal is to crash this boat, I guess. I mean, like, sure.
Well, he's dying too. Like he says he's going to be dead.
But he says these leeches are going to help him hang on longer.
Right.
He might get a little more time with the leeches.
Right.
His nurses, he calls them. So his motivation to me is a little unclear. I mean, I understand he's a disgruntled employee, but I just don't really know. Like, I guess, sure, it's going to cost them a lot of money if they crash this boat and maybe these people could sue them or something, I suppose.
You know what the problem is? It's that he doesn't really have anyone to bounce off of throughout the movie.
Yeah.
So he does eventually near the end. But for a lot of the movie, while all of this chaos is going on, he's just kind of running around and stealing diamonds and hiding or whatever. He comically has this like mini keyboard that he has on his wrist that he uses to control things. At one point, Jason Patrick confronts him and he like uses the keyboard.
That's me punching my imaginary keyboard on my list angrily.
Right.
Yeah. No, this isn't right. He also, yes, he's running around, sneaking around, like, you know, causing chaos, stealing stuff, whatever. And then there's the one scene where Jason Patrick is finally convinced the first officer, who's now the captain.
Tamora Morrison,
right? That he's going to go and like try to stop the propellers. So they're doing this whole thing, which is really quite scary. Like he has to get in the water under the boat and like not get sucked into the propellers. They have like this one like rope that's like keeping him from getting sucked in.
They're trying to feed a wire into the propeller so it'll stop the propeller.
I know.
They can't stop the boat.
I know that, mansplainer. I was getting ready to go there. I was like, he has one rope that's tying him so he doesn't get sucked in.
Right.
As he's feeding the giant rope into the propeller.
Yes.
William Dafoe like comes by and he like sees this going on. They don't ever even see what he does. He's the one that like messes with the lever and then like creeps away and then like and then he like pulls a gun on Sandra Bullock, but like he like totally dips in, does some stuff and like messes everything up. And then they finally like get Jason Patrick out of the water. And then that's when he like draws a gun. But he's like, yeah, he's totally just being a creep.
Yeah, that scene would work a lot better if it wasn't CG from 1997. I mean, I'm sure at the time it was convincing, but you can tell now that it's this just kind of primitive CG. That's the propeller and the rope and all of that. It doesn't look good anymore. There's a lot of stuff in this movie that's kind of like that. Like you can tell at the end when the cruise ship is coming into the harbor. You can tell it's actually not moving. They just make the water look like it's moving, like along the bow. But yeah, I mean, the special effects, I'm sure at the time they were fine, but
yeah. It's that time.
The deal is kind of like the original Speed, that they're trying everything they can to stop this boat, right? Or slow it down or whatever. And Jason Patrick is the one running around doing the daring do that's going to stop it and, you know, going underneath the boat. Or at one point they're trying to flood all the compartments so that that'll slow it down. And of course he's got to be in the compartments while they're all flooding. And it's the cumulative effect of this is sort of deadening, and you just kind of get bored because it's just like dun 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 dun, now we're running to the next scene and it's something else this time. And it's just like, oh, okay. And none of it's particularly like thrilling, honestly.
No, there's a whole thing. Well, one thing with him where he gets trapped in like the mall area, and the Green Goblin has set everything like on fire, and then he's also like put a grenade in the door.
Yes.
So they have to do this whole thing to get the grenade out and you know, yada yada. And then there's this other scene where, you know, Colleen Camp and Kimmy Robertson and all those people are like trapped behind this fire door, and then like gas is, or smoke is coming in through the vents. So then they're like all having to get naked to cover up the vents.
Yes.
And Sandra Bullock, you know, is trying to find different things to open the door. And she's like running around with this guy who's the photographer on the ship. And they're trying to
Dante, work.
Dante. Yeah, Dante. And they're trying to work together. And she ends up finding a chainsaw on the ship. Right. And, she, you know, chainsaws the door. And
not sure why there's a chainsaw.
I don't know either. There was actually two in the closet, mm-hmm. and she chose one over the other. So, yeah, it's odd. I mean, and there's just like a ton of water, like so much water, and a lot of, I mean, feeling very Poseidon Adventure-y, like, you know, with the underwater stuff. And
the passengers are sort of Poseidon Adventure-y. Yeah.
They're all kind of goofy, and, you know, they're there for some convention called Fat Busters.
Yeah.
Because they believe that, and it's just such of this time, too, where it was like, no, if you starve your body from fat, like, then it's going to retain the fat. We say yay to fat and all this stuff. And it's, yeah, it's, they're all like really kind of comedic relief.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it also, you know, I have to share this because you were aware of this as well. Annie likes action and adventure movies, and Annie was bored. Annie went to bed because a lot of this is not very exciting. It gets exciting at the end.
We're talking about our dog, Annie, who watches movies, in case this is your first episode of Temple Trauma.
She really does watch. And it's not just, I mean, there's always, you know, if there's an animal, that's an extra level of excitement. But she does really enjoy like suspenseful things, and we'll like both look at each other and be like, she's just watching this.
Yes.
And there's nothing, like there's no animal in it or anything, but she like literally went to bed because it wasn't that compelling until the end. And I did remember the end, by the way, not the very end, but I did remember the end. And one of the last things we're doing, and I do disagree with you, because I know they were making fun of the ship and the stakes not being as high because it can't go as fast or whatever. But I do say this, that like, you can't stop this giant hunk of ship. It's heading right towards this other giant ship and heading right towards Saint Martin. And like, the poor people on this other ship, and there's no way they can communicate because Willem Dafoe like ruined the, you can't call Mayday or get help or anything.
It's an oil tanker, giant oil tanker.
Giant. So like, even like throughout the ship, like when Jason Patrick's trying to do stuff, Tamara Morrison is like having to use the intercom on the ship to like, that's how they're communicating with each other when he's telling them what to do. Because the final thing he does with, I think, Dante, the photographer, as they go down and they're like going to take the wheel and try to manually steer the propeller, right?
Yes.
So they're having to take turns going underwater because you can't stay underwater for long, and like turn as hard as they can.
Yeah.
And they're successful. They sideswipe the oil tanker, but hey, it could have been way worse.
Yeah. And I'd like to say at this point, the movie kind of gets fun.
Yes.
Because we are arriving at Saint Martin. There's like boats everywhere, right? They're heading for this giant oil tanker, but there's also just different types of boaters.
Sailboats and people just floating floats and just like having a good time.
If you're a man of the sea like I am, we get some good maritime disaster porn here, which is pretty enjoyable. And I mean, yeah, the special effects in some ways aren't great, but a lot of this stuff, once they like sideswipe the boat, and there's some CG in that that doesn't look too convincing, but when they're like plowing through other boats and stuff, it's actually pretty fun.
And this, yeah, this whole sequence I'm here for, and I did remember this, and it's like, it's unfortunate because, like I said, I feel that the stakes are high because it's this giant ship that's heading towards disaster. But unfortunately, until you get close enough, you don't really feel any of the impact of it. So yes, you're just out at sea knowing that you're heading for trouble and you can't stop it. But that's pretty boring, unfortunately. It's a fact, but it's like they're trying to make it exciting with all this drama going on in the ship and what they're trying to do or whatever. But I'm sorry, it's boring.
They're trying to make it exciting with like video game challenges. It's like, this is the challenge now. We're going to do this now. And yeah, the last challenge is the one you're talking about where they're manually trying to move the rudder or whatever.
Right.
But it's just boring. It's not fun to watch.
No, it's not like exciting. I don't feel tension. When I feel tension is when they're sideswiping the oil tanker. When I feel tension is when they're heading right for the town of St. Martin. And like you said, through all these like recreational boaters who are just like, this one guy's like, hey, I have the right of way. And it's like peace and love boat. And they just like totally tear the sailboat down.
One guy like boogie boards off the side of the boat.
Yeah. There's all kinds of just wild stuff going on, which we are also cutting to because at this point, William Dafoe has kidnapped Annie, Sandra Bullock. And I love that he has kidnapped her on like these dual jet skis that are on like this one kind of boat together.
Yeah, it's weird.
It's totally weird, but they're on like their own jet skis, but they're like stuck together. And you're my hostage. She's just so weird and great. Yeah, so that's like, that's happening, but it's not really clear where that is, but like,
right.
It can't be that far away, but like, he seems like he's far away. He's not where like this giant boat is like heading into town. And I do also, one more thing I really love is the kid in the condo that his mom's looking at the condo in St. Martin. It's like, mommy, there's a boat. She's like, yeah, there's a lot of boats out there, Billy. And he's just, and he keeps Scotty Joe. He's like, it's getting closer. And it's like totally, it's such maritime wreckage porn.
And it's funny and sort of silly. Yeah. And in that sort of like 90s disaster vein that was big at the time. But I think it's really telling that like while this part is going on, which is the best part of the movie.
It is.
Our main characters have virtually nothing to do with anything.
Nothing.
They're just along for the ride. Like Jason Patrick's just on like the bridge of the ocean liner getting thrown around.
That's right.
At one point he and Tamora Morrison like get thrown out of the like window of the bridge like they're crashing in a car or something. And yeah, Sandra Bullock is off somewhere else with Willem Dafoe.
Well, she had escaped from him. She like, he had handcuffed her, but then she like pulled a release button. So then he's like jet ski takes off and then he's all pissed about it. And somehow he catches back up and gets her.
Yeah.
And then they're heading off for a seaplane.
Well, we can't skip over the addition of Glenn Plummer's character.
No.
The recurring character from Speed. It's one of those jokes where like the same guys just in this wrong place at the wrong time. Because in the original Speed, the Keanu Reeves character takes his fancy car on the highway, Glenn Plummer's, and uses it to get on the bus. And of course, Glenn Plummer's car ends up getting wrecked. He ends up crashing into those barrels that are on the side of the highway. And for whatever reason in Speed, they're full of water, which would not be what they would be in real life. They'd be in sand.
They would have been sand. Yeah. But they're I can't remember what they're called. There's something barricades.
Anyway, it's the same character. He just happens to be in San Martin. Now he's got a fancy boat.
And it's the same name as his car. Like it has it's called the Toon Man or something. But right. That's like what was on his license plate in the first Speed.
I think he's supposed to be like a big time, like record producer or something. Anyway, Jason Patrick like commandeers his boat, and like Glenn Plummer's like, you gotta be kidding me. Like Jason Patrick's like, I'm LAPD, and you know, Glenn Plummer's like, I'm still in therapy from last time you guys did this to me or whatever.
And he's also like, plus we're in the Caribbean, you know, what are you doing down here?
Yeah. And he's with his girlfriend, and it's silly, but at least I'm kind of having fun at this point.
I'm having so much fun. Like the end of the movie is a good time. I want to talk more about the show. Like just going into town, like
I mean,
the dock is just like it's just being pushed further, like it's just being split apart, and they're just like the ship literally like goes down Main Street,
right? Because like the dock, it's like part of the town.
Yes,
like the whole front of this town is basically all dock, right? Like it's all waterfront built upon some sort of dock, and the ship is just going slowly crashing through this like really big dock, like, you know, taking out buildings and whatnot.
It's like built up almost to where the water is. It looks like, it reminded me of, I was like, it kind of looks like Catalina.
It's like a boardwalk that's like half of a town, basically. Yeah.
It's so great. And the reason, by the way, that they were also able to slow the ship down is they're like dropping anchors as they're going. And one anchor just like flies off or whatever. But then the other anchor was able to like slow them down. But they're still like at like 5 knots or something when they're like running up into St. Martin. And the guy, like, I mean, it's all just silly and comedy at this point. But like there was like, the guy that comes out and he's like part of the boat like falls on top of his car or whatever, the big ship, and he's like, my car, and he's got like his big gulp and he's just like super schlubby, and I love all of this and seeing this happen, and it's truly the best part of the movie.
Yeah, if the movie had this kind of energy, it would at least be a fun movie.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, like, this doesn't happen until the last 30 minutes of the movie. So if you're gonna watch Speed 2 Cruise Control, I would recommend just going, skip into the end. Watch the last 30 minutes or so, because that's the only fun to be had, really.
Well, because all the stuff on the cruise ship is like, you and I both like the Poseidon Adventure.
Yeah, but it's not doing that kind of stuff.
That's what I'm saying. It's not like, it's not quite there. Like, it could have done something like
There's
that.
There's all sorts of different things you could have done. If Willem Dafoe had henchmen, then you could have Jason Patrick stalking the henchmen,
right,
and killing them. But what they choose to do is just not interesting.
No, and so he's just like literally out of the picture a lot of the movie, and like he, like William Dafoe, and then he just like shows up and he's doing whatever, but it's like he's off just doing his own thing.
They don't really balance the characters well is kind of the problem.
Yeah,
they give way too much to Jason Patrick, who doesn't really want to be there. Yeah. So it's just no fun. It's not like Bruce Willis sneaking around, you know, saying yippee-ki-yay motherfucker.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's just some dude doing a bunch of tasks.
It is a bunch of tasks. And I do feel these tasks. It feels like very task driven. Lots of toils. But I will give this compliment. I do think that there's chemistry between Sandra Bullock and Jason Patrick.
Yeah,
I think that they're believable as a couple.
Yeah.
And they're cute together, and they're both looking really cute and everything.
Jason Patrick's hairline is receding.
I know.
But that's okay.
I know. Well, that's just what happens.
Yeah, no, I think they work as a couple, and you know, they end up together in the end, and I'm fine with that.
Yeah. So that part, it's all good. At least it's not all of this plus like a couple that I'm not buying.
The final action sequence we get is Jason Patrick going after the seaplane.
And what a sequence this is. Like, again, he's on Toon Man's boat, Glenn Plummer's boat, and he like has some sort of
harpoon gun.
Is that what it is? Harpoon gun? I'll let you mansplain that one. Yeah, because he shoots this at the seaplane, which is taking off. And he's like being dragged through the wake. mm-hmm. and just going for it and hanging on. And meanwhile, Annie, Sandra Bullock, she's got her tough cuffs or whatever he put on her. Mm-hmm. And she's like just trying to beat the shit out of him.
Yeah.
And like elbowing him in the face and stuff. And she does like throw his bag of diamonds out, the which I was like, good for you. Like throws that out into the water. But yeah, she's fighting him. And then he like hits her. And like there's a whole like bunch of just stuff going on. This is, again, very action heavy and exciting.
Annie was into this part of the movie.
She sure was. Like this is where she was. I mean, from the boat coming on to St. Martin on, she was like just locked down watching. Somehow the seaplane like hits, so is it like an antenna or something? I don't know. Yeah,
Jason Patrick gets Sandra Bullock out of the plane, right. And then Willem Dafoe is veering off into the ocean tanker, and then he pulls up just in time. He thinks that he's avoided hitting the ocean tanker, but then he hits like this tower that's mm-hmm. at the, you know, the head of the ocean tanker. And then that's what causes the ocean tanker to explode.
And boy, is it a giant explosion.
They're clearly trying to outdo the explosion that's
on the runway.
Yeah, on the runway of Speed, mm-hmm. which is a big explosion when the bus hits an empty plane.
It's a freight plane. It was huge.
But yeah, this is a bigger explosion.
It sure is.
Good on you, Speed 2.
And then we also see that everyone has evacuated from the oil tanker. They're all on their like little rescue boat, like going, holy shit. Because this is like a massive explosion. And I do appreciate that Willem Dafoe is like now just completely crazy. And he's just like, gah, 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 like just like chompers everywhere. Like so goblin-esque. And yeah, he explodes. Glenn Plummer gets the bag. He's like, look what I found in international waters. So he's got the diamonds, which he deserves it after all that LAPD's put him through.
I suppose. I think he's already well-to-do, but whatever.
He's had trauma. And then we get Jason Patrick and Sandra Bullock being cute together, and he finally proposes.
Yep.
And they're going to be happily ever after.
Yes. And then we get this weird sort of mid-credit scene, which is unusual for a 90s movie, where Sandra Bullock is going for another driving test with Tim Conway. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's just like a last minute yuck.
Oh, it is. And even so, because she's pulling out from the like the driving school or whatever, and there's a bus going really fast.
Yeah, city bus.
Yeah, city bus. And she was like, whoa, I'm not pulling out. That bus is going way too fast.
Yep. Referencing Speed. Yep. And that's Speed 2 Cruise Control. It killed the franchise dead in the water.
Oh.
So yeah, why do you think this failed?
Because the majority of the film is boring.
Yeah.
It's an action film that, unfortunately, it's nothing against like the sequences and what they're doing or whatever, but it's just not interesting. I know logically the stakes are high because they're running out of time because it's heading for disaster. But when you can't see that ship, you can't see that island, it's not close enough.
Yeah.
It just doesn't really resonate. You know, it's the same thing with Titanic that would really, like you said, steal the boat drama for that year. Yeah. Once you see the iceberg and that happens, like, I mean, then it's everything's on.
Yeah.
It's just, there's not enough
speed.
Yes. There's not enough speed.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's the danger whenever you're trying to do like boat related action movies, is that they're just not that fast. And, you know, there's a reason why the Fast and Furious movies work, because cars are fast. There's a reason why people like car chases and motorcycle chases in movies, because they're fast. You can see them on the road, like the wheels hit the pavement, you can see the velocity. And it just doesn't work that way with a boat. And like, I always notice, even in like James Bond movies, whenever a James Bond movie has a boat chase in it, and there's several James Bond movies that do, it's just never that exciting. And they keep trying to do it, and it's like, stop trying to make boats exciting.
Stop trying to make boats happen.
I mean, I know there's boats that go fast, relatively speaking, to other boats, but they're just not that interesting to watch.
Well, and I think also, too, it's like, it can end really poorly for the people that are on board. Like, I mean, big time, Titanic, whatever. I mean, there's a bunch of Poseidon Adventure things we're talking about.
But those are sinking boats.
That's what I'm saying is, but even so, like that still takes time. But say like some sort of plane disaster, like that is going to happen a lot faster. And it's like, you're also, I don't know, it's just something different about being in the water than like being in the air.
It's not as scary.
Yeah.
Because you can survive falling into the water. I mean,
it's not great. You don't want to do it, but it's possible.
Yes. It's a softer landing.
Yes.
Everything about it is just not as impactful.
It's definitely uncomfortable. That's how I feel when I'm watching this. I'm like, there's so much water. This just sucks.
Yeah. Like a disaster movie set on water works great.
Right.
Like for disasters, they're great, but disasters are different than action movies.
Right. No, it's completely different.
I love Perfect Storm. That's like good water disaster movie. I enjoy Titanic. That's a good water disaster movie. You know, sadly, we just had a submarine accident. So. You know, these things happen in the ocean and disasters make for compelling drama. But when you're trying to make an action movie out of water and boats, it just doesn't really work that well. I would also say that this movie doesn't have the star of the first movie. And so I think that was a big turnoff for a lot of people. I think that's why people didn't initially go see it.
Yeah.
I think they were like, oh, Keanu's not in this. No thanks.
Well, and then the people that did see it weren't like, eh.
Yeah.
Like nobody was like, you got to go see this.
Well, the critics hated it too. So there was that. No big mystery why Speed 2 Cruise Control failed. And it was like expensive.
I'm sure.
This movie cost $160 million, which in 1997 was astronomical. That is a crazy amount of money. And then it ended up making, what, like $40 million?
It opened at $16 million.
That's terrible.
Then the gross for U.S. was $48 million. And then it did technically, I guess, make its money back worldwide. It did $164 million.
That's not making its money back. Yeah, that's making its budget back technically, but not really at all. So, yeah, huge disaster in terms of box office. Well, I mean, you can kind of see where the money went, at least.
Oh, absolutely.
It's on the screen.
It's all there, but no one really cares about Speed 2 Cruise Control.
Nope.
And I will have to say also, you know, usually Sebastian and I will just keep watching things until they become endeared to us, but I don't think this is one of them.
No, definitely not.
That's what we have been accused of, at least.
Fairly accused, I would say.
I mean, I'd say there is some truth to that. But not this time.
Not this time.
Not this time, gang.
All right, well, I'm going to go take my driver's test again, put on some leeches, and crash a cruise ship into St. Martin.
You're really doing a lot.
I like to do a lot.
Multitasking.
That about does it today for Tentpole Trauma. If you like what you heard, check out our social media presence on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Just look for Tentpole Trauma. That was easy, wasn't it? If you like us, hit subscribe and leave us a sterling review on iTunes, if you dare. If you really like us, head over to patreon.com and get involved in one of our fabulous tiers. You'll be glad you did. Want to communicate with Tentpole Trauma? Send an email to tentpoletrauma@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. And who knows, one day you may even get your email read on one of our shows. Well, thanks for listening, and we'll see you real soon.